time here, and I want to thank this area for allowing me to serve. You know, there's only been a certain few of us in this area that's been able to really like put this on. It's been one person in particular trying to like that did a lot of this. I want to recognize our area or our retreat chair, Greg. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for the sponsors that I have had. And the person that we have to be our spiritual speaker today happens to be my grand sponsor. So I'd like to introduce Gordon from the Best Reason Together group in Narcotics.
Hi everyone, my name is Gordon, I'm an addict. And could we please have a moment of silence followed by a surrender prayer, please? God, grant me strength to accept things I cannot change, the courage to change things I can, and the wisdom to know things.
Amen.
I always like to start out by saying that it's always an honor, a privilege, and I consider it a blessing to speak at any Narcotics Anonymous meeting or Narcotics Anonymous function. Because 10 years and 8 months ago, nobody wanted me to do nothing. Matter of fact, everybody just said, oh, here he comes. Let's get on out of here. Somebody's going to get burnt. Something's going to happen. So I know that this is definitely a blessing. You know, in and of myself, I would never be here. Before I even get started, I want to thank God for everything. I mean, before I even get started, I want to thank God for everything. I just want to thank God for everything. And I want to thank this committee for putting on such a beautiful retreat. You know, I come up here with my preconceived notions and my prejudices and all that stuff. And when I come up and I get little voices and I get a little loud and I get excited, I'm enthused about recovery. I love recovery. So bear with me. I'll kind of settle down, right? But I just want to thank you guys for putting on such a great retreat. You know, I came up here and one of my guys said, how did you get Gordon to stay up here for 3 days? I'm a city person, you know what I mean? But I had to remember as a child, I used to be in the woods. I used to love the woods. I was telling a guy the other day, I used to catch snakes and put them in a box, right? We were little devious kids. And we'd throw the snakes over the hill and watch the snakes. Something was wrong with us then, right? They say some of us think we had this disease long before we picked up a drug, right? But I think I had that, right? But anyway, man, I just, from the deepest parts of my heart and my soul, I thank you. I thank you for serving. You know, you hear people say when we read the third, what is that tradition? Some of these tradition books. Thank God I serve. I mean, the but trust and service. They do not govern you. Hear somebody say amen. Or you say, somebody will say thank God. Well, I thank God for people in service. Because if it wasn't for service, there you go. If it wasn't for service, we wouldn't be here today. Wouldn't be here today. So I thank God for service work. You know, I do service work, but I'm not what I used to be. You know what I mean? I feel like I did my dues. But it's coming back around. It's coming back around. Tell you a little bit about myself. Man, I was all in my head when I first got here, right? And I was laying in the bed and I couldn't get to sleep, right? And something in my head was saying, you the spiritual rat? And I would respond, the spiritual speaker. And it said, spiritual what? And this disease, see, I don't claim this disease is mine. This is our disease. Read your literature. Right? I ain't got no monopoly on this. I know I'm not by myself. See, through my experiences, I always thought that I was by myself. Always so unique, so different, nobody would understand. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know what I mean? Just on and on and on. Hey, there's a line, and that comes from the basic text. Now, I quote. Now, excuse me, forgive me, but I do a lot of quotes. And there's a line in the basic text that says that we were caught in a hopeless dilemma. A dilemma is an unsatisfactory condition. We were caught in a hopeless dilemma in which the solution is spiritual in nature. Spiritual in nature. And when I first heard it, I said, oh man, I got to go to church. You know what I'm saying? Because that was the guy that used to walk across the street from a church. I wouldn't want to be on the same area of a church. My brother, he's a preacher. I know this ain't no religious program, but I'm sharing my experience, so that's all I got. I'll come up with some opinions too in a minute. But my experience was like, I remember, you know, using and finding ways and means to get more men. I couldn't hustle no more. The disease had robbed me from all my abilities to just get more. So I was the animalistic level. I would just wait on people and pray. And my family was the first. Nobody don't relate to that. But anyway, and my brother, he's a preacher. He's an evangelist, and he's an addict. Cold-blooded. He went to the service and come back a raving lunatic. He's my young brother. And we get into these spiritual battles. We used to get into these spiritual battles, right? I'm jumping around, I do that. But I don't have no script here. I just talk. But anyway, and we used to talk, and he'd say, well, why do you guys at the NA have to stand up and say, my name is so-and-so and I'm an addict? I said, why do y'all do that? And I was cut. I was stuck. I had about 2 years, right? I said, God grant me the serenity, accept the same, I cannot change. Kurt, I heard I'm praying, right? So my father taught me to do that. He told me to pray even though I don't believe. And I prayed. I said, well, why do you go to church and say that you're so-and-so when you get up and testify? He looked at me and he laughed. He said, oh, identification. Identification. About the church thing. I remember at the end of my road, kind of at the end, I done had a lot of end of the roads, right? And one time at the end of my road, I was so desperate, I was so desolate, I was so, I was just so. And I told my brother said, why don't you just come on to church with me? I said, check this out. I'll go to church with you. You give me $20. He said, check this out. I'll give you $20 after you go to church. I said, damn. At least I could nod while I was sitting there, right? Now I gotta sit through all this, right? And my brother, he's just like a singing preacher. He just sings the butter. He just be going. I'm standing, sitting there. I wish you would hurry up. Come on. So when I heard this thing, God, when I came into the program, it kind of repelled me, right? Because I had this misconception. I was on this mistaken belief system. I had a mistaken belief system about what this God thing was about. Newcomers, you are the most important person at any meeting. You ask an old timer why, and they'll say, because they remind me where I come from. Well, the regular literature say the newcomer is the most important person because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. I'm not sharing for me. I hear people like, well, you didn't get nothing. I sure did. That's one of my, big old one of my pet peeves, right? Where'd that come from? The literature tells us. This is a selfless program. You help yourself in order to become selfless so you can give it back. I heard a young lady last night, oh, I got 90 days, and I can't wait till I get a year, and I go up there and share, and all I got is 90. I said, shut up. Shut up. You got just what I got. We got the night. We're walking up the road together. She see him in the meeting and pushed me.
Hey, lighten up. Lighten up. You know, I was that guy. I used to come to the podium, man. I was talking about
my dad was an addict. My mother started drinking. And they left me at home. And I had to raise two sisters and a brother. And that's why I'm an addict. Blame, 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 blame. I never had a role model. I come from the ghetto. That's what we used to call it back then, the ghetto. I don't know what they call it. No, the slums. That's what it is. I come from the slums. I am a product of my environment. You know, and I'd have people crying. You know, because I could get real in there, right? Because, you know, I'm an actor.
I mean, we go on the set and we act. We good. So I can act. I know I can act. I just ain't got no award yet. But I would come up, man, but it was real at the time. You know what I mean? It was real. It was some issues that I would always like push to the side. It didn't mean nothing for real. I would tell myself. And these issues would keep me stuck. Not only would they keep me stuck in addiction, but they would keep me stuck in recovery. I wouldn't talk about issues. I'd always talk about this superficial, what I got, what I'm going to get, all that stuff, but never talking about what was going on inside. Not talking about the fearful, shaky, insecure person that was on the inside. Never. It was too excruciating. I've never talked about stuff like that. So easily, it was easy to blame my dad. He was never around. It was easy to blame my mom. It was easy to blame my uncle who said I'd never be nothing. It was easy to blame those people. Until I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. See, the first three steps, what they'll do, they'll shatter your illusion of using. It will shatter that if you work it thoroughly and if you surrender to it. It will shatter that. Four, five, or six shatters the illusion of who you think you are. And I thought I was a lot of people. I would come down on the set, man, and they said, "Damn, you look just like your uncle. His name was Cool." Cool. And so y'all know what happened? It was Cool. It's cool. I got a name, then I walk this. Nobody better not call me Gordon. Got a name in school, man. Oh, God, they used to give me the blues. Hey, Gordy. Gordo. Right? And I was always the guy, just don't talk about me. I just want to be cool. Remember this one? I want to just fit in. Don't talk about me. You see my head? It's kind of flat, right? And they used to say, "Steeple, steeple, raise your head like other people." Ridicule, man. But now what I would do, I would go to school and prepare myself. As soon as somebody looked like they was getting ready to say it, pop! I am. I didn't know how to say, "Look, man, you hurt my feelings. To be talked about." Couldn't say that. So as time went on, like, you know, I tell you the story about my mother and my father divorcing and all that stuff, and I had to help raise my two sisters and brother, which is my story. My story don't change. My recovery changes. My story is the same.
I was a speaker last week. Oh, you didn't have too good of a story.
What do you mean have too much good of a story? That's just all you got. That's all you got. I don't make up no story for nobody. I used to. You know, I had it going on. Came for a day. All that old stuff. I never came off. Never. I was the kind of guy, I was the hands and mouth kind of guy.
You spit it out your mouth and I put it in mine.
my story. My story is jails and institutions. That's my story. I hear other people talking about, early on in recovery, I used to come in, man, I hear people talking about, well, I almost, in my addiction, I almost lost my house, my car, and my wife, and my children, and the gold, and the bank account. And I'd be like, what? Where am I at? And I almost left out of here. Because I wasn't identifying, I was checking out all the differences. Right? I said, I ain't never had none of that stuff. What are they talking about? Almost. They almost had it? What do you mean, almost? And that's how I roll. Because I got this penitentiary mentality. Right? And I went to my sponsor. I said, look, man, this, I don't think this is for me. He said, what's the problem? I said, man, the people, I don't know, they're talking about crack and all this stuff. I don't know. Ain't nobody talking about shooting dope in their eyeballs and in between their toes. I ain't hearing that. Pin cushions. I said, shut up. I got people in my life who say, shut up. They don't say, look here, come here. Shut up. Shut up. And I said, wait. He said, look, can you identify with paranoia? I said, yeah. So I cannot deal with that. He said, can you identify with fear? Sometimes. I ain't copping out the fear, right? Sometimes. He said, can you identify with depression? I said, yeah. Loneliness. I said, yeah. He said, well, start listening to how they felt. Quit listening about what they got and what they lost. Because what's going to happen is you're going to compare yourself right out of here. The newcomer, I heard a guy talk, y'all been saying some beautiful stuff up here tonight. Tonight. For the last couple of days, I've been hearing some real, I've just been in meetings. I ain't did that in a long time. Just sit around, just listen. Listen to learn and learn and listen. Wow, that's fun again, man. That's fun. But you know, I'll be sitting around sometimes, well, why don't we just work a certain step? Well, he ain't looking at the 6 and 7. You know, I get all into that because I think I know, right? Just to be up here and just to listen, man, I heard a guy just, I don't know, last night, today's been running together, right? That's how I've been making meetings. And the guy said, like, a newcomer is looking for a reason to discount himself from this fellowship. Disqualify yourself. I know that. Because I tried to. I tried to disqualify myself. I told myself 1,001 reasons why I shouldn't be here. And one reason kept me here. I hated the Western Penitentiary. I hated that. In and out that joint. I heard Walt speak and Walt, we was here. In and out that joint. Countless of times I had a sponsor ask me, he said, Gordon, he said, you know I love you. I said, yeah, I know, man. I love you too. He said, how many times have you been in the penitentiary? I said, why are you asking me some stuff like that? You know, I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to look at that part of me. You know, I've been in recovery a little while now, so that's it. You know, let the past be the past. You know what I mean? But the past is going to always come back to haunt you. The literature says those old boogaboos will come back to haunt you. Boogaboos, look it up, it means fear. The old fears will come back to haunt you. Right? So I said, man, I will not stop at probably 17 years. He said, damn. I said, I know, man. It was like I was going a fourth step all over again. Right? But what happened was I found the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous in the penitentiary. That's obvious, huh? And they say if you don't remember the last time you got high, you probably doomed to repeat it. I remember the whole week. I'm talking about desperation. I was, you know, I had every habit you could think of. Heroin habit, alcohol habit, cocaine habit. And I was hooked on all this stuff. I didn't know what to use when I come out the house. So I never woke up with nothing. And I was always desperate. Always. Desperation was a way of life. And I'm sitting at this bar one night. Guy came up to me and said, man, what's up?
sound. I'm just trying to get something. Talk. It's just to be, then feel normal. Well, I'm not getting high no more. He said, well, wait right here. I'm going to give you a package. I said, oh, thank you, God. Right? Because I'm burning him. He said, I'll be back in about 5 minutes. It was 4.5 minutes. I couldn't wait. Patience. Another guy came in. He said, what you doing? I said, man, I'm waiting on this guy to give me a package. I don't think he's coming. He said, come on, man. I got an old hoochie outside. Just go on up and go hustling, chilling. I thought I was a hell of a thief, right? Early on, I talked about it. I ain't talked about this in a while. But early on, I was what you call a booster. And I, you know, it was like Sears. Everybody knew my name. A real popular guy in the neighborhood. You know, you tell me what you want, and I'd go out and get it. I was that kind of thief, right? I had it going on. I always had a girl with me to shave me, you know what I mean? Because I was miserable something. I couldn't do nothing by myself. Just like today. Turning around, though. But, in the beginning, I was the guy that was stealing mink coats and, you know, suits and all kinds of stuff, coming in the bar, swinging my coat and looking all clever, looking like Superfly the whole bit. And at the end, I was the guy that was stealing toothpaste, candy bars, razor blades. I ain't by myself, right? And this wasn't for my personal use, this was a sale. You hear what I'm saying? I hear about, I remember one time going into the bar, man, and I was at the bottom, the dude up in there, right? And I got it was a bad day. You know the bad days, some of y'all don't have to have no bad days. I had some bad days out there, right? And I couldn't feel nothing, and there was a box of Kotex. And I get a little graphic sometimes. But I need to remember this, right? And I took the box of Kotex out of the store. And I ran up to the bar. Right? This is where this disease has reduced me. He's talking about an animal level. I don't know what kind of level this was. But anyway, I go in the bar and I got this great big box of cocaine. Everybody looking at me. And I go up to this woman. And mind you, I'm breathing the pork chop. I mean, I'm smelling like I want to be by myself, man. And I go in this woman's ear. I got wine all over my breath. I say, check this out, baby. I said, do you mind? You want to buy some sanitary pads? She looked at me. She said, hey, be shaming yourself. I said, you're going to buy them somewhere, you might as well buy them off of me. Oh, man, the way we cover up. You know, that was a horrible day, right? And I sold them, I mean. I walked out that bar feeling like that. I mean, if you're talking about ridicule, flat here didn't mean nothing after that day. What are they talking about me back? Well, I ain't got money. That's all I wanted. I take all that. Ridicule, all that. Right? So y'all talking about reducing to the animalistic level. Goodness gracious. But anyway, I don't know where I'm at, but I'm just sharing. So, my story. So, as an adolescent man, like, I used to drink, and I was an alcoholic long before. You know, I had blackouts at 13. Full blown. You know, get high, and they say you had a ball last night. I wouldn't know nothing. That kind of leave me on my mother's porch. I mean, my grandmother, she got so desperate, man, she hid my clothes. She said, you're not going out. I said, why not, Graham? She said, I don't know what you had last night, but, I mean, the last three days ago, but you're just now waking up. Young, I mean, 14 years old. So I identify with the young kids that come in today. I'm here to share it for the young people, for the newcomer, that you ain't got to go down the road that I went. Trust is there. It waits. Trust me. But as time went on, man, like, I ran into some people who were just like me, addicts waiting to happen. You know, we wanted to dress. You know, I'm a 60 kind of guy. I'm a 60 kid. shop. And he, back then, everything was like chili. You maxed up everything. I ain't talking about it. I love you, Trey. But everything maxed up, you know, and you wore all this real clever stuff. You remember once? Oh, just everybody was real clever, right? Stand out in front of the pool room and the bar and the women be, you know, the fast life, man. And I was really attracted to that. I really was. I wanted everything. I had role models. My granddad was a hell of a guy. This guy was married for 30 years. I never heard him and my grandmother argue. I know they did, but they never did it around us. Every Friday he'd come in, sit down, he'd pull out all his change and give everybody 50 cents. That's big stuff. I couldn't wait for 50 cent day. And I love this guy, but this is a hell of a guy. I just didn't want to do what he did to get there. I just didn't want to. Don't want to do the work. You know how we say in recovery, you got to do the work. Didn't want to do the work. So what happened was, I met up with some guys who were just like me, and this one guy, man, like, I'm going to tell you how isolated I was, and so unique I thought I was, and so less than I felt, and so different, like I wasn't even, not even part of my family, I wasn't part of the world. This guy, I thought that he had the most beautiful house. I thought his mother was the greatest. And every day I come, we come to go to school, I come down his house, and I would sit in the living room waiting for him to eat breakfast, and I say, this is my house. This is my house. I never felt okay. Never felt okay. I heard it broke down into disease, dis-ease, there's a dis-ease, there's an uncomfortability going on. There's something inside of us, man, that just don't feel settled. And man, when the drug came along, it was like, boy, I was tailor-made. It fit. Now I fit. You know what I mean? I didn't, you know, the triangles, I do a lot of studying. I do a lot of reading about our literature and our stuff. And the triangle of self-confession talks about somewhere along the way we faltered. We didn't grow emotionally. We didn't mature emotionally. And I can recognize that I come in at 44 years old. And in emotionally, man, I was probably like, see, I'm struggling at this moment. I don't know, 17, 18 years old. Maybe 20. Outwardly, you would never know it. So I get in this process of recovery and things start happening, man. I got like 17 months in the penitentiary, and these guys, I love y'all. I love H&I. They was bringing meetings into the penitentiary, man, and I was just sitting there like totally mad. I said, these cats are getting high. I know they're getting high. I'm just wondering how they're doing it. They always want to know. I'm a real curious at it. You just can't blow smoke up my ass. I'm not that guy. You can't. You can't tell me it's raining and dripping all down my back. I want to know. I investigate. You hear what I'm saying? That's just part, that's who I am. See this. We talk about God and God, right? And I'm gonna take a risk. See, man, if you want to get to understand and know this God that we're talking about, you gotta investigate. I don't care where you investigate. I ain't just gonna turn my will and my life over just because y'all told me to. So what? You know where I come from? I come from this hellfire and brimstone kind of thing. I'm just waiting on you to do wrong, and when you're wrong, I'm going to bust you in your head. That's my belief system. And it wasn't until I got here that y'all told me, no, Gordon, no. Tell yourself and shut up. No. Get a loving and caring God. Get a God that's going to say, it's all right. Sometimes, man, I don't know, man, I just beat myself up. I don't do it as much as I used to. But this process of recovery, we talk about abstinence plus change equals recovery. I hear people say, well, clean time don't equal recovery. We go pet to your mind. It sure don't. But you got to get some in order to recover. got to get some. It may not equal recovery, but it equals experience. You hear what I'm saying? And I've had a lot of experiences. A lot of experiences. I'm going to call me. I'm going to do this. I heard something the other day. I love this fellowship. I love this program. I love you people. I love God. You know, and I try not to cause any harm. And I try not to cause any pain, and sometimes I do. You know what I mean? That's just life. But a lot of things I hear sometimes I get kind of bent out of shape. And I think all of us do sometime or another, you know, especially around here. So we some strong-willed people, boy. And we'll come up with some real fancy ones. You know, and I do too. There's no doubt in my mind. And I was at a meeting, and this young guy, he was scared, man. I was with him, and I was here, man. He was kicking it, right? I'm being new. I'm being green. I'm being fresh. I said, yeah, kicking the kick. And then he talked about my area. Why did you do that, right? I said, what? In my head. Now they step down, man. Oh, yeah. And I'm from the Pittsburgh area. I'm a proud member of the Pavman area. My home group is Let's Reason Together. We meet tonight. No, Saturday night. That's last night. 7:30. And then I'm an honorary member in a friendship group on the Hill. They just won't let me go. That's how important they got it. But anyway. But he was talking, and he was saying he was at a spiritual retreat. And he was talking about how, and I roam around, and he was talking about how they had closed with the Lord's Prayer. And it kind of offended him. And I understand that. I understand that, right? I'm going to share my experience, right? I remember, man, I was sitting around, man, and I think I had about 6 years, right? And I was sick of NA. I was sick of you people, you know? And I was sick of people coming up here talking about who their God was. I mean, just breaking all kind of anonymity. You talking about certain traditions. And so I called whom I consider one of my spiritual advisors. I got two spiritual advisors, and I got a sponsor that I love dearly, and that doesn't mean that my sponsor is not spiritual. You hear what I'm saying? And I called one of them. He got about 15 years. I said, man, what is it with these people? They keep coming up here, man, they naming their God, and sound like I'm in church, and blah, 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 blah. And he said, shut up. Shut up. He said, why are you so upset because they name and who they God is? Check this out. I'm getting ready to get real. I'm getting ready to get honest. I'm getting ready to do some lemon chair work up here. Right? I said, I don't know, man. It's a tradition violation. He said, what tradition is it violating? The 12th and the 11th. Principle before personalities and anonymity is the foundation of all our spiritual principles. I quote, I'm like Paul Parrott, right? He said, okay, you told me all that stuff, the intellectual stuff, but why is it bothering you emotionally? Why is it bothering you spiritually? That's how it goes, right? Another one of them questions, right? I sit here on the phone and I'm thinking, I want to come up with something real clever, right? And I can't come up with nothing. So I get honest. I start sharing. I said, I don't know, man. It's just scaring me up inside, man. And I'm talking. He said, man, I used to go through that. Because his religion is another sect. You know, and he used to go through the same thing, battling with that. He said, man, I used to go through that, and I had to do some soul searching as to why I get upset about that. It's an isolated incident. It's not affecting NA as a whole. In the literature, our book talks about it. We may frown upon it, but it's done. So as I'm talking and I'm talking, and it hit me. I said, man, you know what I think it is? He said, what, man, what? I said, man, I think that I got such a grab on God that nobody else should be talking about it. That was a funky arrogance. That was some arrogance, man. I'm the only one that should really be talking about. Like God just anointed me and handed me the course.
You talking about ego. Ego is so deep. You know, we can see the surface part of ego. You know, the property, money, and prestige. But there's some stuff inside, man, that keeps popping up and raising this ugly head. It keeps knocking me off. I'm always trying to keep my ego in check. Because it knocks me off, man. I shut down. I don't hear the message. You can be steering your monkey, I mean steering from the Most High. And you'll say, one thing I don't agree with, I just shut out, I miss everything. Something's wrong with that. I got to address that. I got to get honest about that. I got to share that. See, that's what I'm talking about, the solution is spiritual nature. You know what I'm saying? It's a hopeless condition. Right? When I got into recovery, I come home from the penitentiary to talk a little bit about relationships. Anyway, and man, like, you know, I had this girl that she used to come down to the penitentiary and she just thought I was God's gift, you know, I was the best thing since sliced bread. Because I had all that I could talk. You know what I mean? I'm real profound. From, you know, quoting stuff, not from here, just from what I know, from what I read. And I'll be out there in the visiting room and I'm scaring and blah, 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 blah. Matter of fact, she's the reason why I'm in Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't come here to stop using and all that good stuff y'all talking about. I came here about a woman. She said, you ever been to NA? I said, yeah, I was there in 81 and they're just violent people. That's where I was at, just violent. Yeah, violent. You know, they just threw in the towel. They gave up on life. I said, I know for heels of wrong. I can quote psychiatry one-on-one. I don't need no NA. Okay. That's where I was at, right? She said, well, you know, my sister's in NA, and I think, you know, you might want to take a look at that. And she looked good. You know. And I thought that you, me and her, was going to go off into the sunset. You know, like some of y'all do, and just live happily ever after, right? And so I said, all right, I'll give this NA stuff a try. In other words, I didn't know that, you know, God had planned to see this back. Hey, check this out. I used to be the staunch NA guy, man, relapsing, people to just keep using. You just using because you want to use. Why don't you just go on out there and get done, and when you get done, come on back in there. That was my attitude, man. My attitude is day one, if I start taking my inventory, my first rehab was, no, my first detox was in 1972. It should have been in 1962. Right? I didn't get clean until January of 91. I was going to meetings all between 72 and 91. Parole officer told me to go get some notes signed, all that old kind of stuff. Now you just, I heard the message. So I guess what I'm saying is, for those of us who just keep coming back and forth, keep chipping away. Keep coming back. And try to come back clean. I ain't that guy that you just come on back. No, try to come back clean. I ain't giving you no license to you. Right? But anyway, I get out to the penitentiary, I'm going to tell you how self-centered I am. I worked all 12 steps in 17 months and all 12 traditions. All by myself. I was sponsoring myself, so y'all know I had a lunatic for a sponsor. Right? So when I come out, me and the girl, like, we kind of fell out. I don't know what happened. I was doing all the right stuff. I was writing all these pretty letters. I was sending cards and all that kind of stuff. But she told me one time, like, she came down to visit me. She said, look, man, I'm out here all by myself, and, hormones are jumping. Right? So I'm in the penitentiary. I'm trying to be hard. I said, well, do what you got to do. Like, go and take care of that. Don't worry about it. I'm cool. I done worked all the steps. I'm not a turnover. Man, when I get out, she comes down to get me, and I don't know that she's doing this thing. And you know, I just asked, I said, did you tell that guy I'm home? And she said, well, I haven't got around to talking to him yet. And I just went off. You didn't do what? You be this, you be, you MF that, you da 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 da. And she's looking at petrified. I mean, here goes this guy in the visiting room that looked like, you know, I'm the best thing in this life. Right now, I come out addict man.
area, that scared her to death. Those are my insecurities. You understand? So, needless to say, it didn't work. You talking about some excruciating pain. See, in my addiction, I don't shoot that up. I smoke that up. I drink that up. I ain't doing that. But y'all told me don't use nothing. I'm walking across the bridge. I heard a guy saying just this morning. An ID with him. I'm walking across the bridge, coming from my house after she, gingerly let me down. And I looked over at the water. Damn, water don't look too bad. I understand that, man. I understand that suicide thing. I've had guys in my life, I sponsored two guys that I don't know if they killed themselves or what. One was found dead in his bed and one was found floating in the river. I know it's some serious stuff. And as time went on, we all want a little bit on relationships. At 4 years clean, I had the instant family. I had the two cars, brand new car. 9-room house. A beautiful woman in my life. And we were like the NA couple. You know what I mean? I mean, we shared all over the country. You know, we were going to convention Karen and, we need to talk to Gordon and her, so they really know how to do relationships. I mean, we had it going on. She looked good, I looked good, and we'd be at the podium saying about God. God is great, God is good. God has blessed me, right? And what happened was, I used to always pray for her. I'd say, God, just give to her what she so graciously gave to me. Right? You know how we're going through those relationship problems, right? And you try to make everything work. I don't care what it takes. I'm going to just God give it to her. And God started answering my prayer. She stopped needing me as much emotionally. Right? No longer was I the knight in shining white armor. You know, I'm the guy that I got the white armor on, I got the white horse, and I come through and I grab the damsel just fresh and I pick her up and put her on the horse and we ride down the road, right? And the saddle starts slipping and we don't fall off the horse. I'm that guy. Oh, I love you, God. It wasn't funny then, boy. Whew, it was excruciating. But anyway, she started growing up. She started maturing in her own recovery. No longer could I quote the basic text to her. She started reading it for herself. She started getting her own understanding. Now she wants to grow. She wants to do things. And now I'm this isolated kind of guy. I'm the guy that's always in a spell. Right? I'm the guy that's in this 12-by-9 cell, and I'm cool. I'm sick. Don't bother me. Just sleep. Just go here. Whatever you want to do, I'll be right here. She wants to do stuff. You know how women is? They want to do stuff. I want that all. Just, all right. Gradually, I can go. You know what I mean? Now, things are just going crazy because I'm not accepting that. See, I can't go talk about her. She's got her defects, but I ain't talking anyway. But I'm just not accepting this stuff now because right now the caretaker. Here we go. The caretaker is the most needy person in the relationship. Because the caretaker needs to know that they're taking care of somebody. If they ain't taking care of somebody, they don't feel worthy. They don't feel useless. They useful. If they just don't exist. That's the way I was feeling. But I wasn't in touch with that. I wasn't in touch with the spiritual dilemma that I was going through. I was in touch with the ego, the image, and what y'all thought, what y'all might say. And
and my point was, I started sabotaging. I started going outside the relationship. And she would ask me things like this, well, who are you doing now? And I said, what are you talking about? Nobody. Well, you get that. Women know, man. And then, don't watch yourself, guys. There's something that they don't know. You know what I'm saying? So my point was, I wasn't accepting, I wasn't dealing, I wasn't being responsible. Standing up all these non-existent virtues. Living by a code, a mistaken belief system that was bringing about some real irrational thoughts. And the thoughts brought about some real crazy feelings, and I started going into the self-defeating mode. Y'all with me? I'm talking to the mature now. And so what happened eventually? I've got a share down North Carolina one time. They asked me to come down there and share with my good Sharon ass. And I said, look, babe, let's go on down to Charlotte, North Carolina. Let's try and straighten this out. When I wanted to go down North Carolina last week, you didn't want to go. I ain't going. You going down there by yourself. By the way, don't come back. Who do you think you're talking to in my head? I'm dumbfounded. I wasn't expecting this one. So, I called one of you guys, offered me weapons. Say, look, man, I don't know what's going to happen when I come back from Charlotte, but hopefully, man, things work itself out. I'm going to pray on you. I'll pray. And, but now I may need you, man. I may need a place to stay when I come back. You talking about image and ego, prestige. So I get down there and I scare and I tell the people down there in Charlotte, North Carolina, what time is this over? Oh, God. I tell them, I got a lot. But anyway, I tell them, I say, boy, if y'all would give me the job that I got up there in Pittsburgh, make the money I got, I'm making up there, I'd stay here. I don't want to go back home and face this. Of course, there's nobody offering me a job. And I get back, and I call her on the road. And I get near to Pennsylvania. I say, what's going on? She said, what do you mean, what's going on? I got all your stuff packed. Call my partner. Look, man, I'll be over. And man, thank God for the rules of Narcotics Anonymous. Thank God for the fellowship. Thank God for the people in my life who really cares about me genuinely. They're not just being nebby or nosy, wherever part of the country you're from. And I go and I camp out on the couch. And man, you talking about, I said, all right, my thing is, I was related to the dope. This guy, I ain't like that dope. Maybe he got something better. I'm going to cop off him next time. So in recovery, what I was doing, okay, she don't want to do that, I'll get her. Right? Substitution. I couldn't do that this time. I've been working on some stuff. You hear what I'm saying? And I'll tell you, I'll share something with you. When you come up here and you start sharing, and God, you allow God to use you, God starts working with you. Second step, say most of us didn't have a working relationship with the higher power. The key word is working. So what'll happen is a lot of things that I start talking about, they start manifesting themselves in my life. I used to come up to the podium and I would say, when things was going real good with me and her, I would say things like this because I'm cool, I'm comfortable, I'm stable. I say, if you give your car the power, or you think, if you focus on your car, you give it the power. If you focus in on your house, you give it the power. If you focus in on your job, you give it the power. If you focus in on your relationship, you give it the power. Start focusing in on God and give him the power. It wasn't too much later that I had to start focusing in on God. Wasn't too much later. And it always happens like that in my life. I don't know how he works in anybody else's life. I don't know. But I'll tell you what happens in my life. So what happened was, I'm sitting on this guy's couch, man, and I'm in this excruciating pain. And it comes to me. I always say something said. Y'all know what that something is. It's the God conscious in all of us. 11-step addresses that. The God within. And it talks to us. And it says, you better do some inventory on this stuff. You're getting ready to self-destruct. So I did some inventory and I started writing on relationships. Right? And I started writing about the first relationship that I had, and it was with my mother. And I started writing, and things was revealed. It was revealed how I was this God, I'm so needy. I just wanted you to love me. I just wanted you to accept me. And I was willing to do anything for it. I would always cross it. I would have this line and I would bound it. Oh, don't cross this line. And then you cross it and I'd draw another line. Don't cross that line. And I'd say, you know what I mean? I could never stand up for myself. And my fear was that I got abandonment issues. I told you early on, abandonment, I'm afraid that you're going to leave me. And so every time I get into a relationship, I take the same issues with me. If I don't address them, they're going to address me. And that's what was going on. So I started looking at this, and I took it to my father, and I started reading it to him. He said, damn, man, I need to do one myself. You know what I mean? That's that therapeutic value thing. That's my sponsor, man. He's a rough customer, ain't he? He's just rough. He said, man, I need to do one myself. But what happened was more was revealed about the kind of guy I am. So once this sentence out, once you accept where you're at, you're in position to move on. If you don't accept where you're at, I mean, on a deeper level, you're going to stay stuck there because it's going to be that same old line, what if only just one more time. So I had to accept that about me. Damn, man, you're a needy kind of guy. You need to just draw some lines and be all right with saying no. Say no when you want to say yes. You know what I mean? That thing about say what you mean and mean what you say. It's about the fear of it. I'm in a relationship now, what, 6 years later? And she told me, I said, y'all are all alike. She said, look, I am not that person. Don't bring that monkey stick to me. And that kind of put me right where I needed to be. I said, all right, let me do some work. You know what I mean? I'm not the guy to say, I don't do alone too well. I don't, man. God bless them people again. I'm not involved with anybody. And I'm just so spiritual. I got this connection with God. And blah, blah. I'm not that goddamn guy. So what are we here for? Just to be as one. Oh, this is just my stuff. God damn it, there ain't gonna be no isolated place. All in the corner somewhere in the room, just dark and reading the basic section. Oh, no. I was that guy, man. I was that guy. I used to go to what? The door from the day. I had the third floor. I just go up there with a door. I don't want to feel nothing. I don't want to deal with nothing. I'm hiding. Spiritual pimp. I've learned a lot on this road. 6 years clean. I told y'all I wanted to leave here. And getting back there, I left that, didn't I? Getting back to that, and he said, look, man, he said, look. You think you know something now. He said, it's just a phase that we go through. We get these know-it-alls. I know now, I'm cool. You know, I just don't pick up the first one. Yeah, I know stuff now, right? He said, man, like, here's what you're going to have to do to get reconnected. Because I would go to meetings, but I wouldn't be in them. You know what I mean? Sitting back, taking everybody's inventory with my legs crossed and got that recovery face on. You know, that craziness. And I done isolated myself from recovery. You know, I'm levitating now. And I had people calling me on that. Say, whose soul are you saving now, Gordon? I ain't like that. I didn't know that was what I was projecting. But here goes the other side of that. Say, the other side of that is, like, I heard this guy, Jimmy T from New Jersey. He said, we got blessing blockers around here. They try and bless you, block your blessing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, don't get me wrong, like, it's cool to be spiritual, it's cool to be God-centered and all that. But there's some people, man, like, there's some people just like grab on you like, and here you go with that spiritual shit. It's a solution of spiritual nation. What would I be dealing with? Spiritual matter. Spirituality doesn't mean perfection. I think some of us get that confused. It don't mean that I'm walking around on water. It just, and I'll talk about that a little bit. But let me get back to my man. I don't know why I keep getting off of that. But anyway, he told me, look. He said, man, you got to go back in the meetings. He said, man, you got to sit up front like you are. I always sit up front. He said, man, don't say nothing. Don't go in there with your good staring ass trying to fix everybody. You just sit there and you be there for the newcomer. He said, and I love this guy. He said, man, go to more will be revealed. And every time I'm in a dilemma, a hopeless condition, or a helpless condition, or unsatisfactory condition, I will pray before I read. I believe in that. It works for me. And I prayed and I read, more will be revealed. This line came out to me. It said, God help me right now. When we are unable to listen to others, or when we are unwilling to listen to others, we deny the need for improvement. I said, more will be revealed. I said, God, I tried to change from the page, right? And the page just kept coming back. I said, damn. And I looked at that. And that's where I was at. I got complacency is the enemy for those of us with time. Complacency don't mean that you stop coming to meetings. That's part of it. But complacency, look it up in Webster, it talks about this smugness. This arrogance, man, that we carry around. Like, of course we don't say it, but I got my time under my belt. I'm cool. I don't need to listen to nobody now. And that's what the disease was waiting on. Got him. You ain't listening to them, listen to me. The literature talks about our sickest thinking returns. Our sickest thinking returns. So, what happened was, I'd open up our convention. I think I had 5 years, I'm not sure. And I got up there and I cheered. And after I got finished speaking, about 2 weeks later, I wanted to use. I mean, I'm talking about tasting it. Stomach flipping.
I'm like, what the hell is this? Where is this coming from? My head, I could shield,
some smart guy. The stuff they use to embalm people with.
I can smell that kind of stuff. You know, they cut coke with that sometimes, right? I can smell that stuff, right? What the hell is this?
So I'm in this isolated situation. I'm working at work where I used to work, and I was a screen cleaner, right? I used to print stuff like this, and I would watch the screen. And it's isolated. I'm sitting, I'm just praying, and I'm saying, God, reveal me why I want to use like this. We're going to talk a little bit about reservations. Reservations are deep-seated. They will linger on and on and on if you don't address them. I used to hear you guys talking about reservations, and I had this one, and I didn't know I had it. And I would never share. It would come up, and I'd say, there ain't nothing. Smuggling. I got that. And what happened was, after I opened the convention, God using me again, God and just opened me up, man. The fifth step in It Works How and Why talks about the surgery of the spirit. What happens around here, man, our spirit, man, we get, it's like we get cut open. That's why we feel so hard. It talks about how none of us, man, we look for this emotional stability. That's all we ever wanted. But the spirit has to be worked on first before you get it. Anyway, I'm at the sink and then it started being revealed to me. I had a nephew.
This is a funny story.
I had a nephew in the lighting up, boy. I had a nephew who was he sold cocaine, right? And one night I was up there on the set and I'm just up there helpless, bathing and, you know, shooting my records. And I said, cuz, I said, nephew, I said, why don't you give me a package, man? He said, look here, I'm gonna give you this. He said, but I want you to hang out with me. Right? Until I get done. I said, all right, so I take the package and I put him, I'm just happy now, right? I can't wait to get you home, right? And so some little girl come up and get in his ear. A little cutie girl, right? He said, look here, give me that package back and I'll take you to the table with me. Those things don't give nothing back. Right? I said, all right, here. Green steps in. He never come back. He went off into the sunset with her and I ain't seen him since. That was 87. But what happened was, I was still holding on to the joke that I never got. I had a revelation about the joke that I never got. It was revealed to me so clear. I said, I'll be damned. This is a hell of a process. Hell of a process. Just the other day, I got a few guys that's on the sixth step, right? And generally when guys is on steps, I'm on them with them. I'm right there with them, right? And man, we got around the table at this one guy's place, and boy, you talking about some stuff was being revealed. And what I was telling them was, man, like this. You know, say, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defective characters. I told them, I said, look, man, write down what's glaring, what's out there. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Was prevalent, and we'll deal with it as they go. And it seemed like all of them were caught up in relationship stuff. Well, you get in a relationship and sick stuff just starts happening. All kinds of defects start jumping off. And I told them, I said, look, man, we're going to put one with this. We're going to put step one with this. Because when you get in relationships, boy, you're going to have to really be powerless. I remember Billy Newmark, my first relationship. I went up to him crying. I said, Billy, what about relationships? He bust out laughing. He had about 17, 18 years at the time. He bust out laughing. He said, what about? I said, man, what about it? He said, oh, man, it's just sometimes you're going to say you're sorry when you didn't do a goddamn thing. Yeah, he was real simple like that, you know what I mean? I said, what? He said, yeah, man, sometimes you're just going to have to bite the bullet. I said, what? He said, yeah, man. He said, I've been mad a long time. Like, sometimes I just bite the bullet. I know I'm right, but I ain't going to tell her. So, there's something. I guess I'm talking for myself because I'm in another one, so I need to really be, you know, there. But, you know, the sixth step, man, is like, I don't know, when I'm starting to learn about it now, you know, after formally doing it and doing it, you know, with people and doing it, it's like it's ongoing, it's lifelong. You know, it says to remove these defective characters. That's like these papers, I removed them. But here they go, they're still here. They ain't going nowhere. I think what happens is, and it's just my experience, God removes the extreme. I'm gonna get honest. Here we go. I share honestly. You know, I talk about my experience. I talk about things because I know somebody is going through this stuff. I ain't confused about this. And when I got into this thing with my first relationship and I lost the house, mind you, that was another story. God damn. But anyway, I was in so much pain that I wanted a substitute. Right? Remember I told you, get another one. But see, now I don't want to go to women in the room So I'm dealing with the potential recovering addict. You know, the one that ain't got here yet. And I was firing myself up on the floor. And here was my justification. Check my justification out.
See, I got you.
Here goes my justification, right? My justification is, oh, I know her. You know, that's me and her too. Look here, what you doing?
What do you mean what I'm doing? You know what I'm doing. You up here, ain't you?
So I went through that for a few. Until it got to the point, man, where, until I got to the point, man, where I was in my shower and I was washing up. And I couldn't get rid of the smell. And it wasn't a physical smell, it was a spiritual smell. Because I'm a praying addict. I pray. I will pray and get up and do it anyway. Anybody relate to that? I mean, you'd be down on your knees and you'd be just, God, just help me. You know, just help me through this dilemma and I will just help me. And just get up and something, why are you praying something? Say, just get up! You don't believe that shit you talking about. Get up! That's spiritual stuff. But I pray anyway. I try to stop smoking. 5 years. I was trying to stop, and I was a guy that had the shoe stick, I had the patch, I would be smoking, I'd chew the gum, the whole bit, and still be smoking. Heartbeat. Addict man. You know what I mean? Yeah. And my father got wind of it because I was sharing in meetings about trying to stop smoking. He said, you come here, boy. He said, what are you trying to do? Kill yourself? I said, what are you talking about? He said, man, you using those patches and chewing gum and still smoking? Don't you know you're going to have a heart attack? And I would be on my knees, God, just remove the obsession and the compulsion to stop smoking. Please. Be just praying and praying and praying and praying and nothing would happen. Matter of fact, I'd be smoking more. And in meditation, through meditation, right, I'm sitting there one night and I'm just meditating. I do a little chanting, right, and I'm not stepping on anybody's toes or none of that. And I was just there and I was just getting in touch and something said, you keep praying for the obsession and the compulsion to be removed and you're not willing to stop smoking. You're putting the cart before the horse. Pray for the willingness. Six steps. I start praying for the willingness. Stay with me. I start praying for the willingness. God, just give me the willingness to stop smoking. I would wake up at 2:00 in the morning, every morning. Like all kind of stuff coming. I smoke Paul Mall, Northfield. Sit on for about an hour. Every morning. Then I go get a cigarette. Stop coughing everything. Go back. And I would pray. And I would pray. 30 days. I was always the guy that went in the house with a pack. I had to have a whole pack of cigarettes. 30 days with that prayer. Just God, just give me the willingness to stop smoking. I had 2 cigarettes. I went in the house, said the prayer, woke up the next morning, I ain't smoked in almost 3 years. Come forever with it. Guy like me, I was smoking 3 packs of cigarettes. I got so bad where I knew where all the joints were where they sold singles. I was dope fiend. You know, they sell one at a time, 15 cents a cigarette. And we'd be going to meetings. I got somebody there, somebody identified. Anyway, we'd be going to meetings and say, pull over, I'm going to cop. Pardon me. Then where you going to cop? I gotta go get 3 cigarettes because I'm trying to stop smoking. And then, you know, the little Indian, the Chinese guys, they knew me. You want 3? You want 3? Yeah, give me 3. It got so bad. It got that bad. Found out. Got to put a step on everything. You know, in and of myself, I don't have the ability to do nothing. I don't. You know, I think that we're here to depend on something greater than ourselves. Mm-hmm. I really believe that. You know, all my life was I depended on myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I was the power. I had control. You know, you did it my way or no way. Now I'm learning how to come to believe on another level. You know, like if we were in the book talks about it, self-sufficiency is a lie. If we were judging our own case, you know, I wouldn't need you and you wouldn't need me. I think that, you know, I really believe that the literature says this is a God-given program. You know, a lot of meetings in our area have polls. And I used to say, well, this is God's program and this meeting will never stop and, you know, it's because it's doing all it's doing. And what I found out is that things serve its purpose. You know, we had a meeting at 9:51. It served its purpose. And something else sprung up. You know, I really believe that this is God's thing. He put a whole bunch of misfits together that fit. You know what I mean? God is good. God is good. Only in Narcotics Anonymous now got to come in here and talk all crazy. And y'all are late. You know, I mean, I'm doing my job talking like this, like, uh-oh. Two french fries short of a happy meal. You know what I mean? But that's amazing, too. I work for the club. You have to protect yourself. I got stopped. You know, like I tell you, my story tells in the kitchen. And in 89, the last time I was in the penitentiary, I got arrested for 4 cases. And the judge, he put them all together but one. And I told him, Your Honor, I have another case out there and it's coming up in 2 weeks. He said, well, don't worry about it. I'm going to send you to the penitentiary. And when it come up, we'll take care of it and I'll put it together. It never comes up. Mommy. And I'm in recovery now. I come out, I'm in recovery. 6 years later, I'm the guy, you know, like, you know, when you see the yellow light, I think yellow means to speed up. Right? I'm that guy. Oh, it's yellow. And I always catch the red light. Right? I'm better with it now, and I'll tell you why. But anyway, I go through the red light, and I'm lying. As a matter of fact, I just come from this other, how can I put it without breaking something? This other spiritual event, and I'm on a cloud. Right? I'm really rolling. I'm just having a ball. I'm all, I just put the recovering addict. I don't need to share for the most part. And I'm just like, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Police pull me over. Now I'm legit. He say, excuse me, sir, but I see your license. I said, well, what was the problem, officer? Yeah, I've seen that on TV. And he said, you went through the red light. I said, no, I was yellow. He said, it wasn't red. I said, ah. So I surrendered, and I gave him my license. He goes back and he's back there a little while. I know a traffic violation. He ain't got to be on the radio that long. And he comes back and he says, what's your social security number? I said, oh, shit. I said, so-and-so. He said, I'll copy right back. Another 5 minutes, it was like, you know, the TV program Cops come from America. You'd have thought I was one of the most wanted in the United States of America. And they all come out, get out of the car. I'm like, what can happen? This thing got real dramatic all of a sudden, right? So they pull me out of the car, handcuffed me, man. I'm like, what's going on? They said, we don't know, but there's a one out for your arrest. 6 years. No, I think it was 8. Was it 6? One of them was 6. Anyway, 6 years, right? And, anyway, they pull me out, they throw me in the car, we're going to go down to the station, we're going to clear this up. You got anybody to come and get your car? I'm like, oh, damn. So I call somebody to come and get my car, and I get to the precinct, and they're looking at my record. My record is longer than the Pennsylvania Turnpike. It starts from 1964. Right? And they're looking. Jesus, stop looking at this guy. Look at him. He's just looking at me. He's just a nigga talking at me, and I'm They're talking about me again. And I'm feeling so small, so belittled, but you guys stopped me, man. They said, you told me, said, man, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. So what I did what y'all taught me to do. I started cheering. Oh, wait a minute, officer. I said, if you look at that, if you look at the record, you'll see that that was in 1989 that I got arrested for that. The one guy, like God always put somebody. The seventh step says that God will put people in your life who cares enough about recovery to point some things out to you. Right? And he's sitting there, and he's looking at me. He said, well, what you been doing for the last 6, 7 years? I said, I'm in narcotics and I pulled all kind of amnesia, right? He said, well, how long have you been clean? I've been clean. I'm coming up on 7 years. Right? Now, have he said, take them cuffs off that guy. So, get your drink card. I said, no, sir. I'll take off Pepsi, though. You know what I mean? I turned the whole thing around, right? I'm scared. I said, matter of fact, I was just the community champion of the year in Pittsburgh. Which I was. I was in the post event. You should have seen me. I'm like this. Oh, man. He said, I'm not even going to charge you with the drive-through, really. You got enough to come on anyway. It was all old, you have an old case came back. A retail. Man, that's not what it was for. Some carry lotion. Embarrassing. It was like I was doing a fourth step all over again. I'm like, damn. Anyway, so I said, I got him. Now I said, well, how much it cost to get out? I got money in the bank. I got charge cards and stuff. He said, no, you don't need no money. You got to go to the county jail. I said, well, what? He said, you got to take care of it. You'll probably be out tomorrow, maybe even tonight.
Yeah.
All of it came back. And all the feelings. Penitentiary man again. You ain't shit. Here you go again. Went down to county jail. I'm on a steel bench. I called two of my partners. I said, man, y'all won't believe where I'm at. Where you at? I come in the county jail. I go, whoo.
He said, all right, tell us what you need. These are his friends in there.
They showed up. What you need?
Money's not an object.
In my addiction, I couldn't call. I ain't have no phone number. Anyway, I'm in there. Here go a guy that's been in and out of the room. He see me. He's all gone. He said, I just got from this prayer. And I asked God to send me somebody. And you do something. I said, you don't shut up.
So we sit down and share.
That was the longest 1.5 days of my life. I was spending my time that time with a gift about. And when it was about, I was taking care of the records in the past. Nice up stuff. It was time. It was time. And when I found out, I go to court, the DA didn't wait about 10 years, 11 years, 12 years to get the people, the store ain't even open. Closed down. He went and found these people. God put a lawyer in my life. I ain't never had no lawyers. I hear y'all talking about lawyers. That's pretty boring. Got a lawyer in my life, and I call out there. I'm in some, I got a little unsatisfactory condition. She said, what's wrong? I said, they got an old case, blah, blah, blah. She said, all right, don't worry about it. So she gets me out. She said, you're going to have to go to court. I said, ain't nothing we can do. I don't want to go to court. Huh? She said, you got to go to court. So I put on my badge, my work badge, right? I work for one of the biggest hospitals in Pittsburgh. I'm in the community. I work in the addiction field. I've got my badge on, Center for Addiction Services, Gordon. And and I got my picture with me and the Post-Gazette. And I got a whole lot of letters from doctors and lawyers, man. People in my life today who respect me. Steve. They said, yeah, I'll write you anything you want to write. I wish I had them in my addiction. Like a script or something. Anyway,
And I have these letters, and I take them, right? And I give them my lawyer. And she said, you know, this clown in there, I said, what? She said, he went and got these two witnesses that used to work down here. So she went over and she said, look, this was a 12-year-old case. It's about some carry lotion. $3.99. The woman was the manager, she said, I don't even remember this guy. I don't care what y'all do with this girl. So they go and they have a side bar. They go up to the lawyer of the judge. He's standing up there looking like God himself. You know how he is. I mean, oh God, I'm shaking in my boots, huh? And she gives him all my data. So they finally call me up and they talk to the DA. DA said, well, I'll give him 6 months probation. She said, you don't want nothing. I'm saying, like, put this up first. I'll give him all of that, you know. I don't know. She said, shut up. They always tell me to shut up. The lawyer says, oh dear, I think they know this shaking his hand. So they took it up to the judge, and I'm sitting there. She said, I don't know. Yeah, that lawyers don't ever give you the straight up. They always give you the worst. Well, I don't know. I said, you don't know. Anyway, we got there. He's looking. He said, why is this man in my courtroom? I said, uh-oh. Now I trust him. He said, due to the situation and the length of this time and your progress in the community, I'll fine you $100, no cost to court, and it will not go on your record. Mm-hmm. I said, thank you, Your Honor. You want the money now? He said, no, don't worry about it. That was an amazing situation for me, and what's been happening ever since then is my life has taken off. Mm-hmm. Hear what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. My life has taken on a new meaning. I mean, I walk into places now, people with all kinds of titles on the back of their name. How you doing, Gordon? Mm-hmm. How's life treating you? Mm-hmm. You have to sit down. I have people coming to me, asking me, just like Morgan B. Regil says, they ask. The woman that was the manager, she said, I don't even remember this guy. I don't care what y'all do with this case. So they go and they have a sidebar. They go up to the lawyer of the judge. He's standing up there looking like God himself. You know how they, I'm like, oh God, I'm shaking in my boots, right? And she gives him all my data. So the family calls me up and they talk to the DA. DA said, well, give me 6 months probation. She said, he don't want nothing. I'm saying, like, take the 6 months. Get him all upset. I don't know. She said, shut up. They always tell me to shut up. Shut up. So the lawyers, the DA, I seen them over there shaking hands, man. So they took it up to the judge, and I'm sitting there. She said, I don't know. That lawyers don't never give you the straight up. They always give you the worst. Well, I don't know. You don't know. Anyway, we go up there. He's looking. He said, why is this man in my courtroom? I said, uh-oh. Now I'm testing him. He said, due to the situation and the length of this time and your progress in the community, I'll fine you $100, no cost to court, and it will not go on your record. I said, thank you, Your Honor. You want the money now? He said, no, don't worry about it. That was an amazing situation for me, and what's been happening ever since then is my life has taken off. You hear what I'm saying? My life has taken on a new meaning. I mean, I walk into places now, people with all kinds of titles on the back of their name. How you doing, Gordon? How's life treating you? That's the thing. I have people coming to me, asking me, just like Morgan B. Regil stands and asks for my opinion. That just never ceases to amaze me. Me. The guy that sold Kotex. Chewing gum. So, toothpaste. It was my opinion. You know, I'm going to say this and I'm going to shut up.
There's three places that you can be. You can be where the fellowship will put you. You know, because we put each other somewhere. We put them all in. That was great. You can be where you put you, where your ego will take you, your self-centeredness will take you, your self-obsession will take you, or you can be where God puts you. I'm here to tell you, it's a whole lot better to stay where God puts you. You know, I heard it said a while ago, a guy a lot of times, he said that for his first 10 years of recovery, he said he was stuck. He said, I prayed every day, and it seemed like my recovery just wasn't going anywhere. And his pastor couldn't give him an answer. He said he changed pastors, and he said what was happening was he was into the prayer part of the 11th step. He said he never got in touch with the meditation part. The meditation part is the listening. And he said once that he got in touch with that and he started meditating. He said for the next 10 years his life was so fabulous. It was, you know, those new horizons we talked about and those lost dreams awakened. I'm here to tell you, I have not arrived yet, but I see it. And that's the beauty. Before, I couldn't see anything. It was like tunnel vision. Who got it? Who's safe? The world revolves around me. Now, my prayers is real different. They're real different. I used to think, you want to talk about some false humility. Well, I've got enough. I'm not going to ask God for any more because I've got enough. God's in the blessing business. God wants to bless you indeed. Pray for it. Ask for it. Ask for it. Watch and see what happens. You may not get it the way you want it, but it's coming. I remember being caught up in sweet state. And I would isolate myself all up in my attic again, right now, sweet state. I was so caught up in this. And I told God, if you just give me $25,000, I would open up a recovery house. I would give NA $4,000. You know, bargaining. And what happened was, God gave me a job where I worked with people that still suffering. That was my halfway house. He didn't give me no money. He told me work. Right? But it's just amazing how God will answer your prayer. You know, say this number, really shut up. I'm telling this story. It's about letting go. There was a sponsor and a sponsee. And they were going, and the sponsee was celebrating 60 days. And he called his sponsor, he said, sponsor, he said, I'm celebrating 60 days today and I want to go to the meeting, get my key tag, would you go with me? Sponsor said, sure, man, I'm so proud of him. So the sponsor, he got dressed from head to toe, he had creases in his underwear, he was just sharp, right? Sharp enough to cut. He comes out and goes to the sponsor. The sponsor looks at him, the sponsor got his sweatsuit on, looks at him. He looked nice today. He gave him a pat on the back, right? Sometimes we need a pat on the back, right? And so they're walking down the street. The sponsor said, come on, we can walk through the meeting while we can share, right? So they're walking down to the meeting, and there was some recovering addicts, and they were outside trying to get this couch upstairs, right? And one guy said, hey, man, why don't y'all come over and help us take this couch upstairs? So the sponsor said, man, I ain't trying to lift no couch. I'm sharp. I'm going to see that girl. I'm going to get my key set. You know how we, you know, newcomers. Look here, man. The sponsor said, I'll just shut up, man. Come on, we're going to help them up the steps. So they take the couch up and they take it on up and three wipe the steps. They caught the steps and they pull it down. The guys, they hug it. They just really pray, man, thank y'all, man. God bless you. And they rolling. So the sponsor, he's bitching all the way down the street. God damn it, y'all, look at my creases now. I'm sweating all over the place. I got to go back home. I can't go get the girls. He's looking at the sponsor. Sit down, sponsor. He said, you ain't complaining about nothing. You ain't sweating. You don't look all this wrong. What's he said? Sponsor said, man, I let the cops go back at the house. You still carrying it. Thanks for letting me share.